This is straight out of Crumpton with your host, Greg Crumpton.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Straight Out of Crumpton. I'm Greg Crumpton, your host for the afternoon. Looking forward to today, folks. As you know, I'm getting some seasoning on me. I'm a 1964 model, kind of like a Mustang when they first came out. And I have just like recently been working on connecting with other tradespeople that are of the mentoring age. And we got connected. The gentleman who is our guest today, I'll introduce in a moment, but we got connected through Doug Winston with Trade Mentor. And Doug is pulling together a group of, I like to call us old curmudgeons with a lot of gas left in the tank, who have done a lot of stuff in the industry, but yet feel compelled now to really try to give back to our industries, plural, and to the skilled trades in general. So today I'm honored to have Ken Landon join. Ken is the owner and operator of KL Drywall. He is in upstate New York, and I'm assuming he got snow, but I won't ask him because he looks like he has snow gleaming in his eye. But Ken, welcome to the show, my friend.
Pleasure to be here, Greg. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day, and I'm looking to add some value any way I can, man.
Well, you know, one thing we like to do on the show, Ken, is promote a lifestyle of working in the trades. And college isn't for everybody, but it is for some. You know, we just like to try to help people figure out if it is or not. And part of that is having conversations about the trades. But before we get going, why don't you give the crowd of 26 million listeners, Joe Rogan only trails me by a little bit. Why don't you tell us a little bit about you, your journey, how you wound up upstate after growing up in the city, and just walk us through your journey.
Yeah, what an interesting journey it has been, for sure. And still I'm looking forward to even learning and growing as I enter the next chapter of my life. But yeah, originally from Queens, New York, as we like to say, scenic Queens. Went straight from, I'll do the quick time lapse here, just to, so we can, you know, try and add as much value as we can. But, you know, straight out of high school, I was one of those guys that was conditioned to really work. I got into the trades while I was in high school. All my friends were out there working in supermarkets and, you know, doing things like that. I learned to trade. I literally was brought on the job when I was 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, right around there. And then all through high school, days off, Saturday, Sundays, if we had a week off, I was on the job site with my uncle and my father, learning how to tape. I'm a drywall finisher. Been doing it for 40 plus years. Went through high school, learning that trade. Right out of high school, jumped right into the union. I was in local union 1974 in Manhattan. Worked in some of the great iconic buildings in there. Empire State Building, Twin Towers, worked in the Whitney Museum, worked in Waldorf Astoria. That's where I critiqued my plaster ability. I did a lot of ornamental plastering back then. You know, we're talking about, this is in the 80s now, right? So things were a lot different. I rose really, really fast in the union ranks. I was one of the few people who actually already had the skill, already knew the trade. So, you know, I was able to rise very quickly. And, you know, the ceiling was low, set low back then. So it was administrative positions, supervisor positions, foreman positions. And I went through that whole thing, shop steward and union, all of that. And the next best thing for me at that time, being a young, you know, 20 something year old, was to start my own business. So 1987, I incorporated KL Drywall and put together a crew. Started slow, obviously, two people, three people, eventually grew to 40 people. And we became one of the higher end drywall companies out in Long Island in Queens. Ran 40 guys. I learned very early that the more control you have, the better your job can be. We used to sub out the sheetrocking until I brought my own crews on board. They were in-house, so we handled the sheetrocking and the taping. We kept everything under one roof. We became known as, one of the elite drywall companies out there. We handled everything with precision and quality. One of the things I always taught my guys was, there's always somebody that's going to be able to do it faster, cheaper. We need to do it better. The funny
There
thing
you
about
go.
doing it better and being quality orientated is, believe it or not, and it stands true today, the competition diminishes,
Oh,
right?
absolutely. In
Anybody could
anything, really.
in anything.
Yeah.
So that kind of ran its gamut. I did that for quite a few years. God, it was, let's see, 20, 34. So my son, who's now in his young 30s, he was going off to college at the time, and I had thought that it was time for me to make a change. I've been in the industry for a very, very long time. So I relocated. I sold everything in my entire life that I ever made, sold my house, sold my investments, sold, everything. And I moved upstate and I opened up a brewery when the microbrewery fad was big, right?
Yeah.
Started from scratch, had no money, built it from the ground up. We opened up a second location, a production facility where we were producing beer and brewing beer all along, keeping KL drywall on the back burner, never closed it, still doing jobs here and there, side jobs, whatnot, what have you. And recently, COVID hit, as we all know, wiped out a lot of businesses, as well as people lost their lives, which was horrific. So my business is shut down and I hit the ground running, got right back into the trade. And it's been quite a few years now, and I'm fully back into the trade. And when I say trade, I mean the drywall finishing. I don't
Right.
hang sheetrock. I don't do big houses anymore. I'm more of a plaster repair guy. I'm more of a patch guy. I'll do smaller jobs, kitchens and bathrooms for really good customers. But I've gotten to the point in my life where, I've been doing it so long, and I learned how to say no. If it's not a right fit, I just don't do it.
Yeah.
So with that being said, again, going back at this point in my life, I felt that there was a need to give back, and I felt that, that it was important to begin mentoring and be, how do we get these kids involved? So I started volunteering at the local trade school here, which is the BOCES, the Continuing Trade Education, where I'm sure there's familiar ones all over the country, but this brings the kids, juniors and seniors, who, want to pursue a career in the trades, and they teach them. What I found in the trade schools is it's very mechanically heavy, HVAC, electrical, plumbing, even masonry, carpentry. Very, very few are focused on the plastering, the taping, the sheetrocking, and the painting. So I felt that there was a need to just introduce myself and do get involved with the kids in a way where I could at least go in there and say, "Hey, look, man, there are other avenues that you can pursue instead. You don't have to, if you're not built for the college, if you're not built for specific things, here's your other options." And I never had that. I'm sure, Greg, you probably never had that growing up. We were always, I'm not sure, but it just seems like these kids, the direction when you look at them, they need someone to tell them that it's okay to
Yeah.
be a tradesman,
And they tell their parents, by the way.
and to tell the parents. Well, it has to trickle down from the parents. I was lucky I got thrown into it. I didn't go to college. I didn't really have a choice. You were like, I was conditioned to work, to get out there and grind. So I guess in the evolution, college and The trades got frowned, they got looked down upon. And this is, of course, this is my perspective, man. And this is, I'm in the Northeast and I'm just telling you how it is up here and what I see here.
I think you're spot on. I don't think that that is a geographical exclusive, problem. I
Right.
think that for so many years. So I graduated from high school in 1982, and shortly after that is when they discontinued having shop classes at our public school. I
Yeah.
was in the Atlanta, Georgia area, and when I think about it, I was explaining last night. I had a great conversation with a guy yesterday about this. He's a automotive guy, and he wants to start a trade school because he is suffering like the rest of us of finding people that want to do what he does. But that college was the thing that my generation was encouraged to go to, and really that was it. I, like you, second generation in the trades, I enjoyed what I did early. I was out there, and instead of learning how to tape a joint at 7, I was learning how to solder copper tubing. So, same thing, which leads me to, and I know we're getting off this vein you were on, but I think it's worth talking about for a second. We were mentored early. We didn't have to look for mentors. We didn't know what the heck they were because nobody talked about it back then like we do now. But you had your uncle, you had your dad. I have my dad, two uncles in the industry, in my industry. It was a natural thing. If you didn't go to college and you wound up in the trades, usually it was through a relative. Or some kind of exposure you had early. So it's good that we had that, but we don't have that now because if you think about our labor pool, the way I view it is a cartoon of a dog bone. It's got two big ends and a skinny middle. The big end being retirees, the other big end being incoming youngsters, and the middle being a smaller cohort of people who figured out how to get into trades but weren't exposed to it in high school. And those are limited in number. That's a small piece of our industry. But so we've got to figure out how to move that big bone, that big end of the bone, closer to the other bone in a hurry. So
Yeah,
I'm
no, I agree
curious.
with that. I'm just, I was listening to you and I was actually thinking in my head, when do you think that the conditioning, the college conditioning started? I mean, I graduated high school the same year as you did, and it was, you're probably right, not that soon afterwards where it was like this is the norm. Now you're going to go to high school, you're going to go to college, you're going to get the house, you're going to have the kids, you're going to get married, you're going to have the picket fence and blah blah blah, and then you're going to pay off student debt for the rest of your life, and
Yeah.
or
Or not.
not. Exactly, or not, and all of a sudden, the trades were just, I can remember because, I would go on jobs just like you would go on jobs, and we were looked down upon, we were frowned upon. I never forget, this is a quick story. I was waiting on a coffee line to get a couple of coffees, and I'm in my work clothes. I got compound all over me. A guy behind me, he looks at me and he says, "Hey, what are you, a painter?" I says, "No, I'm actually a taper," and he goes, "Oh, a bottom feeder, huh?" And that stuck with me my whole life. I was like, what the fuck? What is this guy calling me, a bottom feeder? I was like, geez, I started to believe that. I was like, wait a minute. And now, the funny part is here we are, 2025. You can't find a tradesman out there. You can find tradesmen. Let me rephrase. You can find tradesmen, but to find a qualified tradesman who is actually honest and has integrity, who shows up, who calls back, who does the right job, who takes pride in his work, that is rare. Okay.
That's called
So
a craftsman.
it's called a craftsman, and that's rare. I can tell you this much, and I know I start, this is a nerve with me. I get really fired up about this. In 2025, I've been in business a long time. 2025, I fixed more jobs in 2025 than ever before in my career.
Yeah.
And people are out there, hey, I'm a tradesman, I'm a tradesman. So going back to me getting involved with the BOCES and the continuing trade education, it was very important to me to get to go back to how do we do this? I felt that I had to be in front of these kids, these students. I felt that I had to give my time. I had to volunteer my time. I'm not getting paid for this. You're not getting paid for this. Go out there and do demonstrations on my own time, sit with these students and talk with them and walk them through it. Because even as much as the instructors are okay and they're there and there to teach them, they need people from the outside like you and me to get
Absolutely.
in their face
Real
where you can
life.
look in their eye and tell them it's okay to do that and tell the parents when they come in that it's okay to do that. And you know what? The funny part of it is that now it's not only okay, it's a necessity. It's needed more than ever. And you're gonna make a lot of money. Like you're gonna make a lot of money doing this. And you know, I'm out there every day. I got my finger on the pulse, at least in my area. I ask a lot of questions, you know, just to stay in tune. I'm actually scheduled to do another demonstration at the end of March with the students up at the BOCES in Albany. And you know, it's just from my perspective, I feel that the impact is made in front of the students, and you have to get them at that's a perfect age, you know, juniors and seniors.
I've been backing up. I'm doing some sixth and seventh grade stuff, 11 and 12. I have found, at least in the areas that I've been in, Ken, once they go to high school, they're too cool too cool for school, so to speak. They kind of get to be a little pricky. But the kids I've talked to that are younger, before they get exposed to guidance counselors especially, tend to be a little more receptive. So that leads me to a question. When you're out talking to these kids and young people, what are you hearing from them? And the reason I'm asking this, last year, or probably 24 now at this point, 2024, I read a study that was showing that the young people, Gen Z, were amenable to doing trades work. They didn't think it was bad. They didn't think it was anything other than an option. If they knew about it, that's an awareness thing. But B, they were embarrassed to tell their parents that they were okay with it because the parents weren't okay with it because of the conditioning. And you asked a while ago, when did this start? I think it started after Vietnam, when the returning population said, we're moving as a nation now. We were kind of picking up steam once again. I think that's when it started. If you look at the age of the workforce and mid-70s is kind of when you started really hearing people getting leaned on about going to university or to college. And so that's when I think it started. And it also stems, in my opinion, and I'm wrong daily, so who the hell knows, but every generation has said they wanted their kids to do better than them. It's just kind of a natural humanistic trait. So I think that propelled it because we were moving into this as a society where doing better meant having more, getting an education. And the way to get the education was to go to college. So I don't fault us as a nation for doing it. I just think the pendulum swung too far. And I'm all for college, really. I come from a family of educated people at higher ed levels. But I also fall back on what I like to say is a surgeon needs a patient and a patient needs a surgeon. You got to have both sides of the coin. We can't all be drywall tapers and plumbers and sheet metal workers. Somebody's got to, diagnose our ailments and do high level stuff that, requires a 4 or 8 year program. I think it's just a matter of educating people through awareness that, like you're doing, that this is an option. So I think that's our and we're getting better by all indications. Trade school enrollment is up year over year over year. So we're getting there, but to your point, and I'll shut up because I want to make sure I get your thoughts on this. You said you got to get in front of the people. The further we go into a digitized world of AI and VR and everything digital, the more important I feel like one-on-one human relationships matter. And people relate if they're in a room. And you're in a room and you're instructing or creating awareness or training or whatever you're doing, that's more, I was going to say more better. I don't think I can say that.
You
That
could
is a
say that.
better, that, okay, it's more better
More better.
if you're doing that live. So just to concur is a long way to say you're right.
I mean, man, you listen, I couldn't agree with you more. I had started my business, 40 people working for me, even in the hospitality industry. I had 45 people working in both locations. And the thing that I pushed, the three words: communication, accountability, and integrity. Boom, boom, boom. You can't have one of those without the other. You have to have that. Communication is number one. We're not mind readers. I'm not a mind reader. I can't read the mind of my employees. I can, but what I can do is if you have accountability, if you show up, I can teach you. And you know what? I'll take a less talented guy that shows up every single day over a talented guy 9 times out of 10, and if you're honest, you're honest. But getting in front of them is a big deal. The AI thing, I mean, I just Doug had a post the other day about the AI. I commented, I'm like, I'm so sick of this shit already. It's like, oh, do we not have an original thought? Like is that going to be a thing of the past too? It's gonna be like, wait a minute, let me hit my my transcribe over here. Let me do stuff like that. It's not going to replace the hands. It's not going to replace the talent of the craftsman that's out there doing it. So, I think that the message that has to get across, and I agree with you there too. The parents have to be a component here. We have to be able to drive it home to the parents that it is okay. And from what I bring from my experience, and why I make it a point to tell some of these stories to some of these students is this. I got out of the business for a little bit of time and I got into another people business. But what happened there was, is because I had a trade and because I had a skill, I was able to get back into the workforce and hit the ground running. So that gave me the security, like to knowing that if you literally picked me up and put me in any place of the country and dropped me off, I could get a job pretty much immediately because there's a
How
need.
about anywhere on the dang earth?
Anywhere. And that to me, that's security. Who wants to be working for somebody for, I had a buddy of mine, he's working for somebody 25 years, he gets laid off. It's like, come on, man. And that's not the point here. But my point is that learning that trade and having that security, that should be a confidence builder for people to want to get into it. It has to stem from the parents. I totally agree with that. They have to be the ones to say that it's okay. And we also have to get more, and I'm sure Doug would love to go more in depth on these topics, but from what I'm seeing, more as much as the schools that we have that are built currently, which is a great thing, they're at capacity. Okay. So how do we become a proponent for petitioning for funds, wherever the funds may come from, whether it's from people who are philanthropists who want to add money to the industry. We need to build more of these facilities so we can house and get the kids in, because here's what's going on at the Schoharie campuses is that they're at capacity. They want to hit the guidance counselors at the high school and junior high school levels to give them the opportunity, tell the kids they have the opportunity to get into these schools. But if they're at capacity, how do we
Nowhere to put them,
There's
right?
nowhere to put them. And you know what they're doing up here, Greg? They're building what they call now mini homes to teach the trade in the parking lots. They're setting up platforms in the parking lots because they don't have the facilities inside. They got these students out here in 20-degree weather. It was -5 the other day. They're out there building. I mean, it's great. It hardened them up a little bit, but
Well, let me ask you a question about that. Not politically speaking, I'm just asking because I simply don't know the answer to this. Why do we as a country give Ivy League schools that have multi-billion dollar endowments millions of dollars every year instead of putting it towards more applicable things like building technical schools? Do you know that answer?
Man, if I knew that answer,
I mean, and I'll only
I don't
ask
know.
because when all this hoopla came out, I guess it was last year about Harvard and Yale and Columbia and all that,
Right.
we're going to withhold federal funds. Why the heck are we giving them money when they have endowments as large as, any private citizen ever dreamed of having? I don't get that. So I got to find somebody that can help me understand that.
That's for greater minds than mine. But I
Well,
mean, it's a valid
but
question, and maybe it's gonna take somebody that is, a well-off entrepreneur that, like, maybe, you were speaking about your buddy who wants to open up a trade school. It's gonna become more independent, I believe,
yeah.
because here's the thing, Greg, in the way that we're moving right now, it's inevitable. It has to happen. What's going to happen when the electricians, there's a shortage of electricians, there's a shortage of plumbers. What I learned from running my breweries, okay, when I got into the industrial equipment, we had 1.5 billion million BTU boilers that were heating our kettles and this, that. That takes a craftsman. That's not some guy you get out at a Penny Saver that
Right.
you pull and say, "Hey, fix my boiler."
That's
No,
not
these
off
are
Angie's list, is it?
exactly. So what I found is that the companies, the industrial companies that were skilled, had the skilled labor to handle those types of projects in my area, which is the Northeast up in Albany, the percentage of the craftsmen, their age, they were in their mid to late 50s.
Yeah.
The entire crews were in their 50s, getting ready to retire. And you know what they were telling me? There's nobody to replace them. There's nobody. They can't train anybody. They're talking about businesses. They've been in business 75 years. They're talking about going out of business because they don't have the labor people to come in. And they're offering apprentice programs, bonus sign-on, all kinds of things to get mechanics in there to work.
Yeah.
And it's mind-boggling to me because, I mean, steam. I had a steam, low pressure steam. It's a whole nother animal, right? I grew up in a city. Everything's steam. You can't find a steam
Well,
guy to
I
save
mean,
your life.
if you think about it, every trade has verticals within it. I'm an HVAC guy. Hell, there's 20 different careers in HVAC. You're a drywall guy. There's 20 different careers in drywall, depending on your specialty, what you enjoy, and what you're good at. I was thinking when we were talking before we hit record about the plaster work that you did. And when I go into New York or go to Boston or DC or somewhere, and I see all this work that is so freaking intricate, a craftsman has to repair and maintain that. And so here's my thing. It's up to people like us, and we're doing it, but we've got to get more of us to grab a couple of youngsters by the arms and walk them across the threshold into the trades. I'm currently working with four kids that are 22 years and down to 15 years old. At various levels, some are working full time, and one's a wrestler in high school trying to figure out what he wants to do. But the dude can draw a wiring diagram of a toaster already, so we're getting there. But
That's wonderful.
it's just about creating the awareness. And
Yes.
when I go to the sixth grade, career day, I pick up the iPhone and I show them, like, okay, what happens when you press the icon here on the phone? And they say something like, "Well, that's how I tell my mom to come pick me up." And I say, "No, That's the result of you pressing the button. Here's what happens. And you walk them through this rather complicated route that that signal has to go through, how the power is generated. All of that is living in a data center that's got to be conditioned, that's got to have drywall. And when you start getting their awareness around that, and I say to them, all right, what's the first thing you do when you wake up in the morning? And they giggle, and then they say they go pee. And I'm like, all right, when you go in the bathroom to go potty, however you want to say that, you turn the light on. That's not magic. That's science. When you flush the toilet, that's not magic. That's science and gravity. And they're bewildered. They're like, nobody's ever told me that before. So it, as rudimentary as that sounds,
Hey, listen, it's the
they're
truth,
not
though.
getting that at home.
No, it's the truth. I mean, my son's 33 years old, and thank goodness that I taught him the things growing up from when he was very, very little, because all of his friends, they couldn't even tell you the difference between a screwdriver and a Phillips head and a flathead. They have no idea. But they also went to school, and their mentality is as well, if I can pay for it, I'm just going to pay for it. But that doesn't give you the education to diagnose anything. And hence the reason even more why we're going to need more tradesmen in there in the field, you know? So,
You know, one more thing I think it does, Ken, it teaches humility.
sure it does.
When the guy called you a bottom feeder when you were getting coffee, I've never had that term thrown at me. I've had a lot of other terms, but what that is to me is a lack of humility, because I don't care if you're a multi-billionaire. If you understand what it takes to build the building you're sitting in, or understand the ballet required to run a valet car service, or the real life stuff that keeps America running, if you're able to comprehend that and have an appreciation for the plumber, the drywall, the electrical, whatever. It puts you in a whole different mentality as a human,
Sure, it
because
does.
humility is where it should, in my opinion, is where it should be rooted in.
Yeah,
And
I believe that too. Same thing with the hospitality industry. I think everybody out there who goes to restaurants should have waited a table in their life, should have worked in a kitchen, should have done that. They would appreciate the job a little bit more. And it goes the same for the tradesman, you know? But going back to working with the students, I felt that how do I create a little bit more impact? How do I, what, how, and my thought process is I'm always, I'm always churning. I'm always thinking. I'm trying to learn and grow. So what happens to these, to the students when I leave them? So I spend a day with them. I give the demonstrations to them. I show them how to fix a hole in a wall or tape a seam or hang a corner bead or whatever the case may be, whatever the demonstration is at that time. How do I stay in their head? So what I did was I launched a YouTube series. We just launched it a month ago, month and a week. We launched, it's designed for beginners. We launched it on YouTube. We launched it on TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram.
What's the name of it?
It's Drywall with Kenny. I can send you the links when we're done, so you have them. But my thought process on that was, is okay, I'm going to do the first coat, the second coat, the third coat in succession. Right now we're in the first coat. We launched, like I said, we filmed for 2 hours. It did the whole process start to finish. We broke it up into shorts and reels, posted it on the other platforms, and driving traffic back to YouTube. But my thought process for this was, is when I leave these students, what am I leaving them with? I'm just saying goodbye, shaking their hand. Put the YouTube video together with the thumbnails, so now they can go back and reference at their own time, their own speed. They have questions, they email me, they call me, whatever the case may be with the student. Now the instructor, hey, go to the YouTube video, go to the thumbnail, how to finish screws, how to tape joints, how to do inside corners, and it's all right there. So My point is it was designed specifically for beginners. It's not designed for veterans who have been doing it 30 years. They got their own methods. They're, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Beginners. In 6 weeks, we've had close to 5 million views, and we're
Wow.
almost at 25,000 followers. So that tells me that there's a need. There's, all right, if
Yeah,
we take a
no doubt.
percentage of the beginners, they're out there, they want to learn. There's people, so how do we drive this? How do we drive this? And it's been successful, so we're going to continue with it. We're going to continue doing it. And, you know, hopefully that we can get some awareness out there, like, hey, this is drywall, this is taping, but it's needed out there. Plaster repair work is needed out there. From my perspective, from my trade, you know, I don't want to make it seem like I'm eliminating any of the other trades, you know, all in a blanket, everything together, it's all needed.
Yeah,
And
I mean, this is where we can say the trades plural, because every trade has to have what you're doing, what I'm doing. There's a gabillion things happening at a grassroots level. Hopefully, we're planting enough seed and watering well enough to where we're going to start to see fruits of the labor. But by you doing the embracing the digital content, what a great way to connect. So I applaud you for doing that. Thank you.
yeah, it was a long time coming.
I
And
can't wait to go watch it because, like, look, man, my wife will tell you that she thinks I'm an alien, and we've been married for 40 years now. But like one of my favorite shows is How It's Made. You know, I
it's
can sit
made.
there and just geek out on a freaking conveyor belt.
I'm
So
guilty. I love it. I love how
I
it's
can
made.
see how learning how to tape a joint, and I really want to know how. I refuse to try it anymore. I'm just gonna call you, Ken, and get them done.
I'll be more than happy to help, man. But
Well, look.
it's been wonderful. It really has been. People have been reaching out. Look, man, haters are always going to hate. No matter what you do,
Hey.
you're always going to have the haters. But I can tell you this, the amount of positive comments and the actual people reaching out to saying thank you for helping me has been overwhelming to the point where we didn't know what to expect. I had no idea jumping into the fire. The only, you know, aside from working with the kids, I had a customer of mine just he says, you know, you explain this so well. You should be teaching this on. And I taught hundreds of apprentices how to tape. He says, you should put it. I'm not a social media guy, you know. So I wound up pairing up with a young kid. He's in his 20s. He's a social media guy. I know how to tape. I can teach. And we put it all together. So
Oh, I love that.
it's been wonderful so far. It really has
I
been.
love it. Well, I think that to me is maximizing both. You're using what's available, the digital platforms. You're using your skills to connect with the youth and the beginners, as you said. So, I love it. I want to come back to you in a little while. Maybe we do, a 6 month checkup, see how it's going. Stay in touch, and let's just keep feeding the beast, because there's plenty for all of us to do. And you and I are both working with Doug to a degree on trades mentor. So we'll just keep the drum beating, a slow, nice rhythm, and build a groundswell. But really do appreciate you, Ken, for A, taking time today, but more so in having the wherewithal, for lack of a better word, to want to expand this and take your 40 years worth of skill, and let's pass it on to the next generation. So thank you for
Yeah,
that.
I listen, it's my pleasure. You got to give back, man. If the guys with wisdom and skills and knowledge and integrity and honesty and all of that, if we don't provide and give back, what the hell are we going to leave?
Yeah, well, we got
Well,
to do it instead of sitting around bitching about it, because that's not getting anybody anywhere. So, all right,
everybody, it's
folks.
easy to bitch.
It really is. Really is. Go check out Drywall with Kenny on all the social media platforms. Share it with people, because somebody out there does not want to be a plumber and does not want to be an electrician, but may just have the skill and the knack for, and I believe it's an art. I believe playing with mud is an art. And I don't have that artistic ability, but there are plenty of people that can learn a lot from watching what you're doing and teaching. So y'all check Ken out. Well, Ken, as we come up on our time here, I just really do appreciate you taking time with us. Enjoy what I've been doing as far as following what you're doing online, and I appreciate that part. So keep it up. We'll circle back and get back in touch and have some fun. Make sure you send me your address where I can get you all the Straight Outta Crumpton swag where you can represent up there in upstate. So
They love it straight out of Crumpton. I told
I
my son,
love
he's
it.
just like, wait, straight out of Compton? I'm like, no, you're close.
It's
It's
close,
Crumpton.
baby. Close. Well, folks, thank you all for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed learning something about not only about the drywall world and the sheetrock finishing and plaster and all the artistic craftsmanship that goes into to understanding what's involved in that. And I have a high appreciation for it. But stay tuned. We're always going to be bringing you some more content with Straight Outta Crumpton. We're going to get back in touch with Ken, see how that thing's going. And don't forget to check out gregcrumpton.com. You can buy the books on there. I got a couple of books for sale, and look forward to continuing the conversation. So for today, for Ken, for Greg, hope you have a great night, and we will talk to you guys soon.